Syrian Kurdish forces are on high alert in anticipation of possible riots after President Trump announced yesterday that ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi died during a U.S. raid. This added to the uncertainty that already blanketed the region after Trump announced last week that U.S. troops would be pulled out. The New York Times reports that announcement sent the Pentagon scrambling to carry out Saturday's long-planned raid, which took place in the northwest Syrian province of Idlib. There are also tens of thousands of ISIS or Islamic State militants and their supporters still in prisons and camps in Syria. So what does the announcement of Baghdadi's death mean for ISIS, for the region? And why was he discovered in an area that is an al-Qaeda stronghold? They are sworn enemies of ISIS. Graham Wood is a lecturer at Yale University, staff writer for The Atlantic, author of the book The Way of the Strangers, Encounters with the Islamic State. Graham, welcome back.
Thank you.
And first of all, al-Baghdadi has been wrongly reported killed in the past. Do you have confidence in this announcement that he actually detonated a suicide vest, killing his children as well, after this U.S. raid?
Yeah, I think it's pretty likely this time. The reports in the past have not been from, I would say, very credible sources. The Russians said they killed him at one point. And, you know, we saw him on tape. It was definitely him as recently as April. So those previous reports were definitely wrong. This time, it seems pretty likely that they actually got him.
And remind us who he is. Many of us remember in 2014, he stood in the pulpit of a mosque in Iraq and announced that he was the caliph of the Muslim world. You know, remind us who he is.
So Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, his real name is Ibrahim Awad, and he's from Samarra, Iraq. He's from a Sunni family there and has a PhD in Islamic sciences from Saddam University. And other than that, we really didn't know very much about him, except that he was the head of the organization that later became ISIS and then the Islamic State since about 2010. And then, as you say, when he showed up at this mosque in 2014 in the city of Mosul after the city was sacked by the Islamic State, after being in the control of the Iraqi government. So ISIS came to town and surprised everyone by being able to take over the second largest city in the country. It was an incredible moment because this guy who had been in the shadows for several years, who nobody knew really anything about, was suddenly in HD announcing that he was the head of the entire world of Muslims, so 1.6 billion people perhaps. And from then on, he's been terrorizing 1.6 billion Muslims and everybody else too by saying that everybody has to go to bow down before him. And that includes, as you say, al-Qaeda, who became his sworn enemy because they weren't so keen on acknowledging him as their leader.
So why would al-Baghdadi be in Idlib province, which is known to be an al-Qaeda stronghold? Why was he there?
He was running out of options. So we don't know precisely why he went to Idlib, except that Idlib is one of these places, kind of like parts of Afghanistan, where it is impossible to invade Idlib. It's impossible to just control this territory that's so crenellated with caves, with mountains, with territory that's much more easily defended by on-the-ground kind of rebel forces. So ISIS had been its territory had been taken away in its kind of core areas of Syria, more in the desert regions. And Idlib might have been one of the last places where he could really hide, but it's not where he was from. So I have to admit, I was surprised to find that he was hiding out there. It's an unlikely place for a leader of ISIS to consider himself safe.
Do you think, as some are speculating, that it might mean that there's been some sort of a peace between ISIS and al-Qaeda, some sort of merging?
No, I don't think so. That could happen down the line, but there were these insults that were thrown back and forth between ISIS and al-Qaeda over the last 5 years, and they were really not things you can take back. So I would be very surprised if a real rapprochement was happening between ISIS and al-Qaeda as a whole.
Each of them calling the other apostates, cowards, idiots, not something that could be healed.
Yeah, ISIS, in that famous propaganda of ISIS, you know, we'd see, first of all, members of al-Qaeda having their heads cut off by ISIS, but also there would be ridicule sent back and forth saying, look, you, al-Qaeda, for a long time, you were giving your allegiance and bowing down to Mullah Omar, who you recently admitted was dead for several of the last few years, the former leader of the Taliban. So ISIS really liked to needle al-Qaeda. And as institutions, I think they were unlikely to be able to be quickly integrated. There is another thing to note, though, which is that they were once the same group. The people of these groups knew each other. And so perhaps Baghdadi had someone who was sympathetic personally to him or someone he was being he was willing to pay off to help him in a tight spot. We just don't know at this point.
Yeah. So what's the significance of Baghdadi? We'll get to where you see ISIS in this moment, but what did he do?
Baghdadi kind of flipped things on their head when it came to jihadist terrorism. So we had for a long time the most famous terrorist in the jihadist sphere was Osama bin Laden. And bin Laden, for all of his religious pretensions, he would talk about things like Israel, like authoritarians in the Arab world, saying these are the things that we need to fight against. And Baghdadi said instead, this is a religious war. We're thinking of history in cosmic, apocalyptic terms, and said it's not just what the king of Saudi Arabia is doing this decade. It's what we are doing in the grand scheme of Islamic history, which has gone back 1,400 years. And so by positioning himself as the heir to the Prophet Muhammad and some of the grand figures from a fantasy of what the Islamic past was, he was telling all Muslims that whether or not you like Israel or Saudi Arabia today, you have to come with me and fight on my side.
Yeah, well, and they did. You know, people came from all over the world to fight with ISIS. But you write that his death will definitively end an era that had already, in a sense, ended, if not with a whimper, then with an inglorious bleeding of complaints from his own flock. You know, some people are thinking that this means ISIS is going to rise up again. You seem to say it's cinders at this point. Why?
I don't say that ISIS will never come back, but there was an offer that he was making to the Muslim world. Again, 1.6 billion Muslims, and about 40,000 of them traveled to fight on ISIS's side. And the offer he was making was, you come and give obedience to me, and I will offer you an Islamic State. I'll have territory where I will implement Islamic law in the way that the Prophet required. And it's been a long time since ISIS has been able to say, we control territory and we're offering a paradise. Instead, Baghdadi's been absent. There have been members of ISIS who have split with the group and have said, we just don't trust this guy anymore. He hasn't been around. We never see him. He doesn't seem to be able to give us safety.
And the Kurds. The Kurds managed to beat back ISIS in Syria.
Yes, a force of Kurds who are avowedly atheist managed to steamroll over ISIS. Mm-hmm. So when they were going to ISIS, they thought they were going to join a paradise where they could bring their families, and many of them did. And instead, they found that the person who was supposed to be leading them bravely in battle was gone for a year, 2 years at a time. And they thought that the deal was no longer a valid one.
It sounds like what you're saying is that the curtain is closing on a vicious, you know, almost, you know, barbaric in his rule, kind of Wizard of Oz. It's just there was not really a there.
By the end, he was a much more pathetic figure than I think anybody expected him to be. When he strode up to that pulpit and gave that speech in 2014, he really did look like he was stepping out of the 13th century and trying to continue a golden era that a lot of Muslims kind of had in the back of their mind but had never thought they would live to see again. And now, not just because of the words of the president describing his ignominious death, but because of the very fact that he was scurrying away for the last couple years of his life, you can't think of him in glorious terms anymore. He's a quite pathetic figure.
Graham Wood, staff writer for The Atlantic, author of The Way of the Strangers, Encounters with the Islamic State. Graham, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.